La doctora Evelyn Farkas, ella fue subsecretaria de Defensa para Rusia, Ucrania. Nos atiende a esta hora. Ana, la primera pregunta, y pues obvia, es ¿qué tan optimista está ella hoy de las reuniones en Estambul?
Good morning, Dr. Farkas. Thank you very much for your time today at W Radio. We want to begin by asking you about how optimistic are you about the conversations between Russia and Ukraine at this point?
Buenos dias, Julio. Thank you for the opportunity. Unfortunately, I can't say that I'm very optimistic. It does not appear that the Russian government is really ready to compromise on their maximalist demands with regard to Ukraine. They are signaling that perhaps their military focus will shift to the southern part of Ukraine and away from attacking the capital city, Kyiv. But none of the language coming out of the Kremlin, out of Moscow, indicates that they're ready to compromise and to allow Ukraine to maintain control over its territory, which is what the Ukrainian government is still seeking.
Desafortunadamente no es optimista frente a estas negociaciones. No parece que el gobierno ruso esté listo para comprometerse y pues nos dice que sigue con el... Lo único que ha dicho es que el foco militar se va a cambiar al sur, ya no en Kiev, sino al sur de Ucrania. Pero nos dice que el lenguaje que sale del Kremlin y Moscú indican que no quieren comprometerse, quieren seguir controlando Ucrania y pues por supuesto que Ucrania no quiere que esté en ninguna parte de su territorio.
Doctora Farkas, usted ha pasado años analizando el nivel de amenaza de Vladimir Putin. ¿Hasta dónde cree que él está dispuesto a llegar?
Dr. Farkas, you spent years analyzing the level of threat that Vladimir Putin could mean. Until what? What can you do? You believe he's able to reach? How far would he be able to go?
Well, it seems that Vladimir Putin's objective, of course, has always been to have control over, political control over Ukraine, and he has decided to use his military to try to achieve this objective. In 2014, he tried with the annexation of Crimea and starting a war in the Donbas region. He was not able to weaken Ukraine sufficiently to have the government change to one that is friendly to the Kremlin. So now he decided to invade and to use military force and occupation to achieve his objectives. Unfortunately, he now sees this effort in Ukraine as part of his legacy and part of a vision he has for a new Russia where Ukraine and Russia are united in one state. So this is a very, as I said before, maximalist objective. And right now he appears to be ready to do almost anything. As you know, there have been threats about uses even of nuclear force.
El objetivo de Putin es controlar Ucrania y ahora está tratando de utilizar a sus militares para lograr ese objetivo. En 2014, con la anexión de Crimea, comenzó una guerra en el Donbass también y en ese momento no logró debilitar a Ucrania lo suficiente para cambiar de gobierno, un gobierno a favor del Kremlin, y ahora decidió invadir Ucrania y usar la fuerza para lograr ese objetivo. Nos dice que ahora se ve el esfuerzo que está haciendo para tener una Ucrania de su lado, para lograr su visión de una nueva Rusia que obviamente sea con Ucrania anexado a ellos, haciendo parte de ese país. Ese es su objetivo máximo y está listo para hacer cualquier cosa e incluso ha amenazado con usar armas nucleares.
El presidente Joe Biden ayer no quiso retractarse de lo que dijo de que Putin no debería estar en el poder y aclaró que eso no quiere decir que Estados Unidos vaya a hacer algo para sacar a Putin de la presidencia. ¿Ella cree que estas palabras, esta insistencia del presidente Joe Biden empeora la situación en Rusia?
Yesterday, President Joe Biden declined to take back his words that Vladimir Putin should not be in power in Russia. He did state that this does not mean that the United States is going to do something to have him removed from power. But do you believe that this persistence about this statement that President Joe Biden has made is only making matters harder right now?
Not really. I think that President Biden is speaking the truth, which is that sitting in the Kremlin, controlling the Russian Federation, and unfortunately the lives of Ukrainians and others, is a man who has no regard for human rights and is an autocrat and is a danger to the international community. That is the reality. And I don't think it complicates matters to speak the truth. We will continue to pursue our objective, which is to stand up for Ukraine's right under the UN Charter to maintain control of its borders and its sovereignty.
¿No cree que esto complique las cosas? ¿Cree que Biden está diciendo la verdad? Nos dice que estar al frente del Kremlin, manejar la Federación Rusa, la vida de los rusos y de otros, es una gran responsabilidad y es un peligro tener a una persona que no tiene respeto por los derechos humanos, un autócrata. Entonces, para ella no complica decir la verdad. Sigue Estados Unidos con el objetivo de pelear por los derechos de Rusia y por el capítulo de las Naciones Unidas, que es defender la soberanía y libertad de Ucrania.
Félix, recuperamos a la señora Farkas. Ana, repetimos la pregunta para que la gente entre en lo que llama Félix Contexto.
Sí, señor, la pregunta que Félix le hacía es que aunque, pues sí, ella critican el perfil del presidente Vladimir Putin, pero no hay una forma de sacarlo en el futuro cercano y que si esto significaría que si las negociaciones fallan, pues continuaría una guerra en Ucrania por un tiempo indefinido. Dr. Farkas, we wanted to speak a bit more about what you were mentioning in terms of President Vladimir Putin and his profile and the fact, well, the critics to his profile. Unfortunately, there's not a simple way for him to leave power at this point. And if the negotiations fail, are we simply seeing a scenario in which Ukraine will continue to be in war for the foreseeable future, even for years?
Well, if the negotiations fail right now, then yes, it means that both parties feel that they are not losing and that they have something to gain by continuing to fight. So the war will continue for weeks and months. I'm not certain whether I can say confidently that it will continue beyond that. Much depends on how much the Russian government is willing to put into the campaign, into the effort, and of course the West as well in backing Ukraine. But I do think we see some possibility for a compromise, but I don't believe that Russia is ready to compromise in terms of allowing Ukraine to maintain control over its territory. And as I said, Ukraine is not willing to forfeit any of its territory right now.
Si las negociaciones fracasan, eso quiere decir que las partes sienten que no pierden estando en una guerra, es decir, que ganan con la pelea. Entonces, la guerra podría continuar por semanas, por meses, no está segura si más allá de eso, pero depende mucho de qué tanto Rusia esté dispuesto a ceder o a dar y qué tan comprometida esté con estas negociaciones y también qué tanto Occidente pueda respaldar a Ucrania. Entonces, hay una posibilidad para ella de un acuerdo dentro de estas negociaciones, pero no está segura de que Rusia tenga esté lista para ese compromiso. Ucrania quiere mantener el control de su territorio y pues por supuesto Rusia no quiere que Ucrania tenga este control, así que lo ve complicado.
Con estos vectores contrarios, ¿cuál sería, en su opinión, un acuerdo razonable que pudiera ser aceptable por las dos partes para terminar con esta guerra?
In your opinion, in your experience, what would be a possible scenario for both parts to agree on? What would Russia have to give in? What would Ukraine have to give in? What would be a reasonable agreement for both parties to cease the fight at this point?
Well, there are multiple potential outcomes. One potential outcome is that Ukraine manages to hold on to the territory that it has and even pushes Russia out of Ukraine or convinces the leadership in Russia to give up the entire fight in Russia, in Ukraine. That is, of course, today not very likely, but it's not impossible. The second option is a compromise where Ukraine says what it has already said it would agree to, which is neutrality. It will not join NATO. It will stay militarily neutral. It will allow the use of Russian as another major language, official language in Ukraine. It will perhaps provide some autonomy to the Donbas area. And then Russia would have to withdraw entirely from Ukraine, with the exception perhaps of Crimea, where they can share some sovereignty, which is something that Russia and Ukraine have done in the past. So there are some outlines for a compromise, but it would still require Russia to be more militarily defeated, frankly speaking.
Hay muchos resultados posibles, nos da dos, uno que Ucrania pues pueda convencer a Rusia de que abandone su territorio, de que deje la lucha en Ucrania, y pues esa es una posibilidad, aunque no la ve muy probable, no lo ve tan imposible. Nos dice que hay una segunda posibilidad y es que Ucrania acuerde neutralidad, que no ingrese a la OTAN, que sea neutral militarmente hablando, que permita el uso del ruso como lengua oficial en Ucrania, también ceder autonomía en el Donbass. Rusia, pues obviamente se tendría que retirar completamente de Ucrania, a excepción de Crimea, y pues compartir la soberanía en este territorio, algo que nunca se ha visto anteriormente. Entonces nos dice que hay algunas posibilidades y esas dos pueden ser alguna de ellas. Las dos implican que Rusia se ha derrotado, por decirlo así, de cierta manera, militarmente.
Doctora Farkas, usted hizo recientemente una referencia hace poco en un tuit sobre unas lecciones que dejó Madeleine Albright que podría retomar el presidente Biden. ¿Cuáles son esas lecciones en diplomacia que el presidente Biden podría aprender o retomar de Madeleine Albright?
Dr. Farkas, you made reference recently in a tweet about some received lessons that Madeleine Albright left that President Biden could take up. What are those lessons in diplomacy that President Joe Biden could learn or take back from Madeleine Albright?
Well, I think that President Biden has absorbed these lessons and he's demonstrated it, because one of the things she said is to speak clearly and truthfully and to stand up for democracy. And that was something that she did her entire life. And she also believed in standing up to dictators and using America's great military power in order to provide pressure so that diplomacy would succeed. She, in effect, was a Democrat who very much believed in Ronald Reagan's comment about, needing to negotiating through power. So strength in diplomacy comes from your military power. And I think that President Biden understands that. That is why we are providing so much military support to Ukraine. We've been doing it, of course, for 8 years. And that is why our hope is that the Ukrainians can actually win quickly, and or the Russian government can decide that this makes no economic sense for them, no political sense for them, and they can abandon their objectives.
Well, thank you so much, Evelyn Farkas, for your time in W Radio. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Muchas gracias.
Bye-bye. Cree que Biden sí absorbió esas lecciones de Madeleine Albright, porque ella decía que quería hablar, se debería hablar claro y con la verdad, que se debería pelear por la democracia. Eso hizo toda su vida. También creía en luchar en contra de los dictadores, usar el poder para presionar y que la diplomacia triunfara. También era una demócrata que creía en lo que decía Ronald Reagan, que era necesario negociar con el poder, usar la fuerza en la diplomacia, y Biden lo entiende, por eso ha venido apoyando en los últimos 8 años militarmente a Ucrania. Y también pues esto para ella puede resultar en dos cosas: en que Ucrania gane rápido esta guerra, o pues que estas sanciones que se le han impuesto a Rusia pues terminen por disuadirlo de seguir